You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. See the Funny Side is a new project from RNIB as part of the How I See campaign that will give you the opportunity to shine in the comedy spotlight. Successful applicants will take part in a workshop and perform live in front of an audience. A lady who is no stranger to the spotlight is writer, comedian and actor Georgia Morrell, who is partially sighted and who has performed stand-up across the UK and is a regular face at Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Georgia will be leading the See the Funny Side workshop and she joins me now. What made you want to get involved with this project?
It's an absolute pleasure. I love the name. See the Funny Side is terrific. I guess being able to give people a chance to do something they wouldn't normally consider. How many blind comedians or performers do we actually know? Blind and visually impaired and partially sighted. I know me, and that's pretty much it. And if someone's got a skill for something, but there's no possible workshop or outlet for them to be able to do what they want, that's something you need to do something about. And as well, I've always believed that not just with sight loss, but with other disabilities as well, you have an extraordinary perspective on life. You know, no pun intended for visual impairment, but whenever people have asked me that awful hypothetical question of, if you weren't disabled, what do you think your life would have been like? It's like, that's, you know, that's like stupid. And I don't even want to consider it. And I see the privilege of being able to have this different perspective on life and these different experiences, and also have found it's a brilliant place for comedy and entertainment and telling stories. And that's really why I do it, was to tell stories and blow people's minds a bit.
Brilliant. And you certainly do blow people's minds. What do you hope people will get out of See the Funny Side?
Quite a few things, really. Either the confidence to continue writing and developing, whether that's for them on stage or just to write or to perform, and as well, creative outlet. If it's something that they haven't been able to do before, fantastic. I think confidence is always going to come down to do those 5 minutes. And for some of the people doing it, it might be the first 5 minutes they've ever done of performing stand-up. It's terrifying, but it's ripping the plaster off, and then you can go for it. And then, yeah, what's to stop you?
So what do you think you'll get out of this?
Oh, I don't know. We'll soon find out. a chance to be, well, being a part of it is enough for me to be able to help people access a skill and performance that they might not have had the chance to do before. And also, what attracts me to anything like this is we're bringing disability more to the forefront. Like, why aren't there more disabled entertainers, actors, people generally in the public eye? And if this is a step closer to that, and we've got a long way to go, then I'm pretty much sold on that.
Brilliant. And so just on that, because representation and diversity seems to be such a huge conversation at the moment that's happening, I guess, throughout the whole of the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
What do you feel that the industry could do to get more people with disabilities and more representation across the field?
I mean, where do you start, really? The entertainment industry, I mean, we've got a pay gap problem. We've got women underpaid for doing the same job with the same amount of time and same amount of hours. So we haven't even got past that yet. That I find incredibly worrying, let alone that we actually haven't got on screen or on the radio or in films yet enough diversity and people with disabilities. You just don't see it. The one thing we can do is keep doing things like these workshops and encouraging the next generation to come through. But those companies, they have to change their policies. I know that was brought in, it was an American idea of having a quota. So if you were casting something or producing something, it had to have a certain amount of black or disabled, or so you had that cross-reference. It's like, that's fine, but I don't want it to be a rule or a law. Like, saying we're box-ticking, and that's not the idea. We need to create an even playing field. They'll say, well, it's always based on talent. And it's like, well, fine. However, you're making it inaccessible for people of, say, a poorer background, of a racially diverse background, or of a disability. It's very expensive to go to drama school and train as an actor. Very. If you come from a warehouse background, you can probably get, I think, like one or two scholarships now. And that, you're stuffed. And we're not catering to disability enough in this country. Access is appalling. And we're supposed to be one of the front runners of this. And we're just failing completely and actually going backwards on what we've already done. And if those industries can set an example, I don't think they realise how powerful that would be if they could do that a bit more. Like, think how many people watch your shows and the knock-on effect that would have, especially for younger generations, if they could see a disabled newsreader or presenter. that would become a norm to them, and then we're even making it an even playing field. But they, I don't know why they're not doing it. Too scared to. I don't know.
Yeah. Talking about representation, and especially you spoke about women, and you do a podcast as well, don't you?
Oh, I do indeed.
Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, of course. It's called Queens of the Hungle. We describe it, me and Sarah Bradnam, we host it, as a feminist podcast. Sarah's an excellent feminist. She's really like good at it and does her research, and I maybe get a bit silly. It's a lot of fun, and it is... been more relevant now than ever. Just pick up the papers and look at the current climate. More women need to be speaking out and defending their rights, because how else are we going to get past all of this? And we all desperately want to move on and get past it, but make sure we get something positive out of it all as well. And that's the least we can do at Queens of the Hungle. And now we have a bit of a laugh about it as well.
Georgie, you were also in a BBC drama called Jane Lake. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes, Jane Lake, it was a one-hour sort of drama slasher thriller. It was written by the brilliant Matthew Graham, who's won BAFTAs, and he wrote Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. Great guy as well, really nice. And directed by the wonderful Kate Rowland. The premise of it is about a blind character, Maggie, who is going off to see her mates. They sort of rented a cottage, and... I can't say any more without giving it away, because I'd absolutely stuff it. I met Matthew before. He'd even written it and casted it. The BBC wanted him to do his thing, and he wanted to meet somebody who had experienced visual impairment, who was visually impaired and experienced being blind. And it was a friend of a friend who put us in touch. So I had a coffee with him, sort of told him my, you know, experiences in 2 cents. And then 2 years later, I'm in it, which is great. But he wanted to write, because Maggie's not a very likeable character. You like her because she's quite funny. She's quite witty. And what she's done, she lost her sight in an acid attack. Topical. And she turned losing her sight into a business, basically. She did audiobooks and became very, very rich and successful at doing that. She's very, very determined. So you do admire her for that. But generally, she's pretty unpleasant. She's horrible to people. She character assassinates, she intimidates, she manipulates. And that's what attracted me to it. And that is what Matthew wanted, was, sure, yeah, she's blind, she's disabled. That doesn't mean you have to be good and saintly, because that's a common misconception. It's like, oh, you're so brave. You know, how do you cope? And it's like everybody else. and I think he quoted, actually, in an interview, me saying, I said, I'm a good example. I'm a total bitch. And it all goes wrong, basically, and it all gets very scary and very nasty. And what I also liked about it was it is done, the show, through as if you're Maggie and what she can hear and how her senses operate. And one key bit in it, me and Matthew discussed this when we met, was there's a time they start talking over her and she can't register who's talking what. It's just too loud and she loses it. And I took that from experience. When my sight was completely gone, I remember mates talking or being somewhere, there are a lot of people talking and you just have to get away from it. I was at a stage where I hadn't quite adapted yet. So I did pull a lot from my own experiences, and Matthew wrote it well, and he did take what I said and put it into it as well. He wanted it to come from a place of truth, as opposed to what he thought it was to lose sight, which does often happen, I'm afraid, with some writing. Like, that's what I think it's about, and then everyone thinks so, and you're stuffed. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to do. I really, really enjoyed it. I was at the time previewing my stand-up show, my second one, so I was in the evening doing big stand-up, so trying to have to, you know, control a whole room of people and make them laugh, and then go on to radio where you just have to bring it all right down. That was tricky, and the director got a bit frustrated with me, but we got there in the end. Just having to work those two mediums was quite challenging as a performer.
Is it really important for you to create things that are audio-driven, so whether it's radio plays or audiobooks? Because obviously being visually impaired, TV and other things aren't necessarily always accessible.
Yeah.
So is that really important for you to work in that arena?
Yeah, the way that my work's generated and what I want it to continue to is to do more voiceover, more audio description. And if it's coming from somebody who can appreciate it in themselves and has experience, great. I want to make sure my stand-up shows are developed for radio as well. And I'd like my third show, and this is very ambitious, to be fully accessible. So audio description, BSL interpretation, as much as I can get into it. almost to arrogantly set a precedent of why isn't every show like this? People say 'cause it's expensive. It's like, there's money out there. Come on. We all know there is. We're just not being allowed to have it because it's got to go to other things like Brexit.
Back to comedy in terms of what you do. So you're visually impaired and you're a brilliant comedian. And so do you have any tips that you'd like to give to anybody that wants to pursue comedy who's visually impaired?
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to use your disability, as I have done. There are reams of material in it, and it also has the wonderful effect of educating people on what it is to actually have a disability, quash some of the ridiculous misconceptions, and also knowledge is power, really. People are very scared of disability. If you can make it accessible through laughter, brilliant. Other tips as well, for just, I mean, whether you're disabled or not, with going into comedy, you've got nothing to lose. You know, the worst is not going to happen because you can only get better. So just do your first gig. Sure, you might die, you might fall flat, but just push through, do more, get better. You know, fail once, fail again, fail better. I'd also say as well, this comes up a lot whenever I tell people who aren't in the comedy world, they always ask about hecklers. It's not that bad. It really isn't. Don't go to places where you know they will be, which is certain clubs and pubs. Just don't do that. Go to places that specifically ask the audiences not to heckle the acts. And they do that. And in fact, most do as well. I mean, I did a sort of pub brewery one the other week, and I thought, this is a bit, yeah. And I did get heckled in the end, even though the MC said don't. It was bad heckling. Don't worry about that. And even if you are, trust me, the audience are normally on your side. I had a terrible heckler in Edinburgh. Oh, he was an awful human being. And he kept going at it, and I kept putting him down. But you could see the audience were getting annoyed with him. So, well, we're here to listen to her, not you. So never, never worry about that.
I think a lot of people as well, when it comes to going to comedy shows, people are like, oh, I don't want to sit in front in case a comedian picks on me. So
I talk to the audience quite quickly, and I'll get them to answer certain questions, but if you get picked on by a comedian, well, it's all right. They're not going to... They'll make fun of you for a bit and that's it. But it's like, if you don't like that, don't go to a comedy show.
That's true. And so you're very passionate, you're very driven, and you are one of the busiest people on earth. Mm. So what drives you?
Yeah, I'm so tired. Ooh, I'm addicted to work. And maybe it's I've got an addictive personality and now it's work as opposed to other less healthy habits. I get a buzz out of it, I think, not just performing, but getting certain bits of work, getting asked to do certain things. That's my buzz, that's my dopamine, and that's why I just keep craving. And if I have days where, say, I haven't had much come through or I haven't got any gigs, I'll be climbing the walls. And as well, I mean, I'm in it for the long haul. There's an opportunity with what I do to make people more aware of disability, of visual impairment, and if that's doable through this, through what I love doing, then why the hell not? I want to leave something behind, I think, as well. Yeah. That's me. I've always, that's plagued me all of my life. So I think that pushes me as well.
In your career, because you're going from strength to strength, I'm seeing you all over the place. It's amazing. So what is your proudest career achievement to date?
Oh, that's a tricky one. There's quite a few where I've definitely just sort of quietly gone to myself, well done, George. You know, you nailed that one. Which I encourage, actually, people to do more. Because it's so competitive out there and we're so grateful for what you can get. It's like, now have a moment, just go, well done, me. And then get back to reality. I feel very proud and moved, actually, when I get messages, tweets, Facebook messages, things like that, and emails from people who have got something from my work. So in Edinburgh, I was only a couple of shows in with the new show, was very worried about it. And a young man messaged me afterwards. He had cerebral palsy. And he said, I've got cerebral palsy. Thank you for talking openly and honestly about disability. And I'm like, that's job. Good, good. And it also as well, whatever reviewers said, what anyone else said, I was like, no, I've got that. I've done that. Well done, me. Box ticked. Oh yeah, there's like always like certain places I've performed. And I've got a gig coming up at Christmas and the lineup. The lineup I'm on is just so brilliant. Just being up there with some amazing comedians is that's quite humbling as well, actually. One thing I'd like to add is if you, as a punter, as an audience member, go and see more diverse stuff. Keep supporting live comedy an actor are doing something that appears a bit different. Take a risk on that. Don't go and see the same things and the same people, because that is just so dull and so sad. We need to move forward.
So what comedians do you love? Who's your top three comedians at the moment?
God, I get asked that a lot. I'm heavily into, it's because they had some great podcast shows on BBC Radio 4, is Susan Kalman and Mae Martin are fantastic. And the shows that they're doing, those are brilliant. I can't get enough of them. But with all comedians, I can't say that there's one that I put up there. I mean, it always comes out, and most men say Stuart Lee. He's this cult figure. I mean, no. I like lots and lots of them for different aspects. So I love Greg Davies' first full-length show because he made it so heart-wrenching at the end, but he just laughed all the way through. I like Mae Martin. She's talking about sexuality and addiction, which is really refreshing. And yeah, I'll take different bits from different ones. Even ones that I'm not massively keen on, there's usually still a little bit there I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Mm. Punny stuff, I can't be bothered.
Yeah. So I guess you're a hybrid and that's what makes you...
Yeah, brilliant. And then always sort of come to, and then so you only learn this through gigging and putting yourself out there is what makes yours individual and different, and establish your own act and your own persona. I mean, I'm still doing it, so many still are, because it stops developing, because it's so much of you in the act. It's also so personal that as you change, so does the act. It's sort of a version of you. I don't go on stage as myself because I'd just be dull.
That's not true, but it's quite interesting you said that, because as you know, I'm a musician. And you know, as I'm working on my debut EP and stuff at the moment, and it's just finding your voice, because you don't want to be like everybody else, so you want to stick out, but
yeah,
you don't want it to be quite conceited and you're trying too hard to be different. So how do you, I guess, get around that?
Audiences will tell you. If you're putting it on too much, they will see through it and they will switch off immediately. And why make it harder for yourself? Why put on all these things if you can't pull it off? I say, if you do want to do that, and there are acts that do, and they do it very well, is you have to do it with 100% commitment and confidence. John Kearns is a good example, but he commits to it. Harry Hill, I mean, you can't possibly be like that in life. That'd be terrifying. As long as you commit to it and you believe in it, then the audience will go with you. But the moment you start doubting, they will too.
Thank you so, so much, Georgie. It's been amazing interviewing you again. Thank you.
No, absolute pleasure. Hi, I'm Georgie Morell, and I am working on a See the Funny Side workshops in the West Midlands. I'm a comedian, a writer, and an actor. If you want to apply to See the Funny Side with the RNIB and myself, then you can. Applications open on the 27th of November, close on the 14th of January. All you have to be is over 16, registered blind or partially sighted, and based in the West Midlands. The dates of the workshops are the 3rd and the 10th of February, and to apply, all you have to do is write to us and say why you want to do it and a very funny joke. Send your applications to connect@rnib.org.uk and put in the subject title, See the Funny Side. For more information, please go to @rnib or follow us on Twitter @rnib and the hashtag See the Funny Side and How I See. Or if you have any questions, you can give us a call on 0303 1234 555. Thank you for applying, and we really look forward to hearing from you. If you would like to come and support the amazing acts at See the Funny Side, then you can. It is the 10th of February at the Old Joint Stock in Birmingham, and doors open at 1:30 for a 2 p.m. start. We look forward to seeing you then.